Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Yes, the Cats were gritty in the wet. It was fill your boots for Sydney and desperate times for the Eagles at TSCG as the bye rounds finished. Plus, it was a week of rascal behaviour. Mason Cox's goggles went flying. Ben Keys, the culprit. Was it worth the $1,500 fine? Welcome to the Footy Podcast. Today on the show, we chat with Sam Landsberger about how much officials are paid at AFL clubs, and podcast debutant Josh Barnes joins to discuss the coaching landscape as Damien Hardwick looms. But first, here's Jay Clark following the launch of the 2023 AFL Rich 100 list. Let's do it. So Jay, thanks again for coming on. How are you going?
Good, thank you, mate.
Now, a big list dropped on Sunday of last week, the Herald Sun AFL Rich 100, yes. One of the most read lists in the AFL world.
Months of work, Will.
It is. We take a little bit of the mickey, but no, it does take a long time, you know, to get these figures. You've spoken about it before.
Yeah. Raided a few offices.
Yeah.
Broken
it, exactly.
In. Balaclavas on.
I can't believe you did it, but year after year, you somehow have to steal the list.
And so accurate. We get it down to the dollar. So it's been warmly received. There's been no sort of massive blow-ups just yet. So I think it looks okay.
I think it's pretty good. I think it's part of the public discourse of the football world now. I think people know roughly what the salaries are around, but it's good to, you know, have it there and do your own analysis, and we've read your analysis, and it's been quite good.
Yep.
But unfortunately, not everyone probably gets the Jeremy McGovern, the Tim Kelly, the Lance Franklin from a few years ago wage.
Yep.
So that's what we want to look at today.
Yep.
Who are the players that might have been sitting there on Sunday, they'll pick up the Herald Sun and thinking, hang on, why aren't I on more?
Who spat out their cornflakes that they looked at some of these players? Well, I'm going to start at the bottom here. There's a few on my list. I reckon, so generally speaking, players who might be providing excellent value on a little bit unders, on their salary at the moment. I think Dangerfield, who's been on big money in the past, up near $1 million a year, we can start at him. He's scaled back now at $600,000 to $700,000. Now, you remember his grand final performance, second in the Norm Smith medal, was outstanding. I reckon he, generally speaking, is on unders, but we know why. Tom Stewart's another one, $625,000, and this goes to the Cats' flat structure, right? So when player managers walk into Catland, often they would sort of say to clubs, oh, this is what we think he's worth. The Cats say, this is how he fits into our structure. So the Cats really set a strong tone in terms of their pay structure. And they say that all the players, the whole list is signed off on the way they pay.
It's amazing.
And that's how, well, Chris Scott talks about, I think he said it's, he thinks the way they manage their list is one of their greatest advantages. So
for Jack Bowes last year, they would have been up front in the sense of this is what,
Yes, absolutely.
Is part of a...
This is where you would fit in, yes. And they reward players who have performed well over a consistent period of time. So that's Tom Stewart, $625,000. So that makes him, I think, pretty much the second most expensive cat behind Jeremy Cameron. But still, when you think he's arguably the best defender in the competition, or so he's certainly his coach says, I reckon $625,000 to $725,000 is great value for him. What about Josh Dunkley at Brisbane?
Yeah.
He could win the best and fairest this year, couldn't he, Will? Won the best and fairest at the Bulldogs last year. Could go back-to-back at Brisbane. I think he'd become the first man to do it since Paddy Dangerfield, actually. So it's $625,000 to $725,000. It's clear he hasn't moved for money.
Yeah.
He would have got that at the Bulldogs, wouldn't he?
He could have got more at Essendon too, potentially.
Yeah, yeah. So that really jumped out to me. I think that's really modest for a bloke who performs week in, week out, gets it done. If Brisbane play finals this year, you would sit there going, I know exactly, as a Brisbane fan, I know exactly what we're getting from Josh Dunkley. So I reckon that just shows that maybe making the move, there was something else to that, whether it's a culture thing.
A lifestyle thing.
Yeah. It could, well, it's not about the money.
No.
I know that much. Because you look around at some of these other salaries, you know, Treloar on 900, Heaney on 800 and something, Wingard 700, Gaff, like they're all on, you know, big coin as midfielders. But Josh Dunkley, I take my hat off
to. Did you find that was a Brisbane trend as well, similar to the Cats? They didn't have many top-end salaries?
They're pretty well structured. They had sort of Harris Andrews, Charlie Cameron, Lockie Neal's on. They got a similar structure to Geelong in that Jeremy Cameron's one out, and maybe Lachie Neale's one out there at Brisbane. So, and they got to spread the love a bit. So what about Jordan Dawson? You look at his form for Adelaide this year. Like, I think, just what a great move, because we say to players, oh, they should stay at one club, right? And they should show loyalty. Well, here, Jordan Dawson is a great example of a man who went to another club, went back home on what we've got him, $650,000, $750,000. So that's not massive money.
Not for what he's producing.
And he could be all Australian captain, and he's taking his game to a new level. And we celebrate that. I think we should celebrate that as much as we celebrate the bloke who stayed for unders and showed loyalty, because it's worked for him. He's loving life in Adelaide and he's playing incredible football, isn't he? Connor Rosie, so he's on $650,000 to $750,000. You know, him and Zach Butters, well, they're genuine Brownlow medal chances. You know, Connor Rosie and Zach Butters to an extent, like, they could become million-dollar players down the track. And at $650,000 to $750,000, that's looking like pretty good value, I would have thought.
So are they two that will, in their next contract, certainly just go up?
Oh, absolutely.
Or will it be like a Geelong matter where they do try and smooth it so it's not out of control?
And that will be interesting. That will be really interesting, because clearly they'll get a pay bump, they'll get a pay rise, but it's like, well, how can Port Adelaide structure it? Because you think they've got Jason Horne Francis there, so that the pay structure of that midfield for the Power will be really interesting. I think it's automatic they'll be sort of $800,000 players, but then whether they go to $1 million, like, as you see at West Coast, you know, Jeremy Govan 1.2.
Yep.
Andrew Gaff on huge money, Tim Kelly on 1.1, that's going up. You know, like, maybe they paid some of these guys too much.
Rosie and Butters does remind me of Oliver and Petrarca, and they did get the pay deal eventually with that $1 million.
Yeah, seven-figure territory. But have Port Adelaide got even – so Melbourne, you've got two in Petrarca and Oliver. At Port Adelaide, you've potentially got three as well. So,
and we know that's hard to have $3 million players is hard to have in the current climate.
Yeah, and well, Richmond sort of juggled it a bit with Rance, Cochin, Rewalt, and Dusty.
Yep.
That's probably one of the best examples. And West Coast did win a flag with the way they did it, so you still got to acknowledge that. But they'll put, like, a huge part of Port Adelaide's spend in coming years will be in that midfield. Mm. That is where the bulk of their money will go. They're looking out for a defender at the moment, whether it's Ben Mackay or potentially more likely a Sava Radigalea. They'll invest a bit of money there. Also, Max King, so he's on $725,000 to $825,000. Look, that's probably right at the moment, but you know, he's another guy who has real ability to go north and be paid $1 million. If he can probably get a bit more consistency in his game, like, is he a consistent player just yet? I think he's on his way, but I don't think he's perfect. And you look at the other end of the scale, so who's probably getting really good deals at the moment for his year? Heaney, $850,000. You know, most expensive overs. Swan. That's a bit overs, but then again, he would acknowledge he's had a pretty average year. It was good at the weekend. Chad Wingard on $700,000 at Hawthorn. That's been a huge deal. We know Andrew Gaff, spoken about him a lot, $800,000. Adam Treloar, even $800,000 to $900,000. Like, that Collingwood deal that he got to go from GWS to Collingwood, which then was carried over at the Western Bulldogs, was really significant. And Zach Williams at Carlton from GWS, $800,000. Just a shame he probably hasn't been able to get his fitness right.
And I guess, Clarkie, you've written a lot about it this year in terms of cap space and what levers clubs can use. Looking at these numbers, does it reinforce that, geez, if you do have money up your sleeve, it is more powerful than being able to, you know, sell an asset? Just the ability to have money at disposal is crucial.
Yeah, and even another layer to that is the timing. So getting the timing of that salary cap space right. So at the moment, North Melbourne, for example, down the bottom of the ladder, they'd be forward paying as much as they can on Larky and Simpkin and all these guys. So they do have a bit of room still as they enter a window. And Essendon is a really interesting example at the moment, because we know, we've spoken about a few times, they've got like $2 million up their sleeve or under their mattress. But do they go this year? Do they go next year? You know, they got Parrish and Redmond to sort of keep. So it's like, you've got to try and structure the money so you still do have room heading into that premiership window, if you know what I mean. So,
and who leads those discussions at clubs? Is it the list manager? Is it in lieu with the CEO? Who takes charge of trying to strike the timing?
The list management boss often leads a list management committee.
Yeah.
And Chris Scott talks about this, the committee at Geelong. Andrew Mackey sort of leads it, but Chris Scott is still on it.
Yeah.
And CEOs, I think, don't really seem to be playing an active role in that.
Yep.
But they may have some visibility on the outside and just sort of and ask a few questions rather than being sort of super hands-on. So the list management committee normally includes the list manager, the recruiting manager, the coach, the football manager, these sorts of guys. And they're pretty – you talk to list managers and they say they have the same conversations that we do around the water cooler at the pub. It's like, right, if we want Josh Dunkley, how much are we going to pay him? Or, you know, is it worth paying Ben King $1.2 million? They've, you know, you'd love to be a fly on the wall to absorb this. And they say it, that they go the same sort of conversations that we have. So
they, do they come up with creative trade ideas and all of that sort of thing as well?
Yes, all of that. And they're constantly managing their own list and who comes out of contract, the salaries they're owed and getting value from all their players and not trying to avoid that sort of doom loop, which GWS to an extent has been caught in, you know, having to overpay, fight to keep their players. They've got four players just outside the top 10, still pretty tight, even though they lost Taranto and Hopper last year. So you want to avoid, you know, clubs like Hawthorn, Geelong in the past have been able to sort of operate on their own island rather than being get caught up in a lot of this competitive stuff. So, yes, it's all very interesting, Will, and I think the fans out there, the footy public, you know, their own knowledge and understanding of this sort of stuff has really increased. So they're right across it, front-ended, back-ended contracts. It's been really interesting to see this space evolve over the last 5 to 10 years.
And we're eagerly awaiting a deep dive into Essendon's list analysis and cap space Thursday, 6 a.m.
Yep.
We've spoken a lot about Essendon, but we'll await to read your column on the Herald Sun. Yeah,
they got scope. So you'd think they got Darcy Parrish and Mason Redmond at the moment, who are both, I mean, Redmond needs a big pay rise. Mm. You think he goes into the top 100 on 600 to 700 probably a year, which is like a Nick Vlosten sort of wage. Parrish, I sort of see as being a $700,000 player. I haven't got him in the top echelon, 800, I think sort of 750. So they'll have to be able to fit them into the salary cap. They still have space. Who do they go for and when do they pull the trigger? That'll be in cap space, Will.
Clarkie, as always, thank you.
Thanks, mate. This is
Brownies Podcast. G'day, it's Jonathan Brown, the host of Brownies Podcast. Along with my boys Dino and Campbell Brown, we give you the world's loosest podcast.
How did you get locked up again?
I was set up by the Queensland coppers.
This Bazball has been crazy. Everyone's f***ing Bazball.
Twiggy cash.
Shove a bullet next time we go to war. God forbid someone gets hurt.
Oh, there it is.
Well done. Ask your smart speaker to play Brownies Podcast or search for Brownies Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast.
Well, we're joined by Sam Landsberger. Sam, thanks again for coming on.
Nah, it's a pleasure, William.
You're nearly a mainstay on the podcast, which is great because the people, the listeners do like
it. I'm angling for the host here, Will.
Yeah, which is fair enough. I've done a pretty poor job. But I think the listeners do like you. And it's, you know what they would have liked? A piece last week that I think did captivate a lot of people, especially industry people within the AFL. And I did like the online headline that I read. If you want to work in footy, here's how much you will earn. It had a breakdown of the different positions, job positions, what you could possibly look to make within a football club. And it was surprising, some of the numbers. And Sam, you spoke to a lot of people for this story.
Yeah.
What jumped out at you in terms of what you can make as a wage?
So it was a big project. We tried to cover off most of the salaries in the game, most of the obvious ones. The thing that probably emerged for me was that we've heard all year, and rightly so, that the coaches are underpaid and that, you know, the soft cap getting stripped back so much over the past few years has really hurt their hip pocket. But it's also hurt that of recruiters, and they probably don't have the same platform and voice to vent that. But yeah, look, when you see that there's full-time recruiting officers at clubs on, you know, $70,000-$80,000 a year, and these are the men and women employed to fly all over the country and actually scour for talent and find our, you know, find your club's next AFL player, I think that, you know, was a little bit surprising. I thought they might have commanded a higher pay packet. And then within that, the discrepancy within pay packets in the same team was just so large. So, you know, I think several list managers at clubs would be on north of $300,000. And to be honest, like you speak to some people in the industry and the workload between that, you know, is probably similarly demanding to those blokes that are, you know, on closer to or, you know, less than $100,000. And that became a bit of a theme across all clubs in that similar jobs from club to club, the salaries could actually vary quite a lot. So if you've got a name, you're probably likely to be looked after. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a level of irony, I guess, with that, given a lot of coaches do say you're only as good as your list?
Definitely. Yeah. And but even from a coaching point of view as well, like I think a lot of fans out there would think that, you know, all the assistant coaches and that are really well paid.
Mm.
I think the ceiling for an assistant coach, a senior assistant coach, someone at the absolute top would be $300,000. Most assistant coaches would be probably closer to $180,000, $200,000. And there was one interesting anecdote in the story about the two Sydney clubs and the fact that there are several GWS assistant coaches that couldn't afford to relocate their families to Sydney because they're on a salary where to rent in Sydney for, what, $1,300 a week when you've got three kids, you just can't do it. So they've actually left their families to go and live in Sydney. Someone else mentioned that Adam Kingsley probably couldn't attract all of the people he wanted to because of that cost of living in Sydney plus the salaries. And in recent years, there's been a lot of staff bounce between the Giants and Swans because other football people don't want to move to Sydney because the salaries in this climate under the soft cap are too low. So staff between those clubs sort of shift between one and another because they can't attract new talent.
One thing that jumped out at me, Sam, with the global market that you mentioned in the story for the high-performance manager, a lot are made of, you know, the Darren Burgesses and the Andrew Russells of the world.
Yeah.
And so they are well-paid because they can be chased by other sports.
Yeah, I mean, as a rule of thumb, you would like to think that the head of your football department would probably be on about 100 grand more than the high performance manager. But in reality, that probably doesn't apply to every club because, as you say, when you work in football, if you're a coach or a recruiter, et cetera, you're sort of limited to the AFL industry. Whereas if you're a high performance manager, Darren Burgess has worked at Arsenal. So the global market versus, you know, the one industry market does change maybe the pay scale a little bit. So you'd suggest that a Darren Burgess, you know, he's comfortably earned more than $500,000 a year in previous seasons. He's obviously worked at Melbourne before, at Port Adelaide before. That's going to be a lot more than a lot of football managers are on now. So that was an interesting one. That just said for the guys at the top end of that field, there can be a slightly different economy.
And do you think Melbourne and Adelaide would say, oh, yeah, well, he was worth it given, you know, the success they've had during the time that he's been at both clubs?
His records, you know, speak for itself. I mean, obviously Melbourne won the premiership in 2021 under him. Then he left and they probably struggled last year. I think their fitness, particularly in the last quarter of games in the second half of last year, was a key reason that they went 6-8 to finish the year and crashed out in straight sets. How much of that is linked to Darren Burgess? Oh, who knows? But, you know, when you win a premiership, it's absolutely worth it.
And the big dollar, you know, the big, big dolls that we like to talk about that we saw, you know, Gillon McLachlan, he's done some big, big dolls.
He is.
Which I guess wasn't surprising given, well, actually was surprising that Andrew Demetrio was on a similar amount to what Gillon McLachlan is on now, roughly what we can gather.
Yeah, well, Demetrio was paid $3.8 million in his last full year in 2013, but that included a lot of bonuses, so a longevity bonus and a lot of performance bonuses. I think, well, he told me that his average was about $1.92 million a year, and it was really interesting that he went so public in the fact that he thought that the AFL should disclose the CEO's salary. They did when he was there, and basically they did, I think, for the first 2 years of Gill's reign, the last being in 2016, but then when Mike Fitzpatrick was replaced by Richard Goyder as chairman of the commission, Richard Goyder basically decided, no, we'll keep this in-house. So,
you don't see Gill mentioning what his bonus might be when he leaves?
It'd be fascinating. I mean, he's obviously done the TV deal. He's in the midst of a CBA agreement. You know, he's got gather-around attendances up. It'd be quite astronomical, you would imagine. Who knows if he gets to... Yeah, if he triggers all those bonuses, his last year could be a huge sum. But from the people in the industry I spoke to, they thought that Gill was probably taking on north of $3 million a year.
And CEOs, clearly, they were the most at club level getting paid the most lucrative deals. Brian Cook, we believe, is on around $1.2 million. That was sort of the ceiling of CEO levels?
That was the ceiling. There's certainly a feeling that Brian Cook is among the highest paid administrators in the game. I think your first job CEOs, your entry level ones, are probably going to be closer to that $600,000 a year bracket, but there's no doubt that there are CEOs in the game earning seven figures. And that was, I spoke to Jeff Kennan about this, and You know, he said that, yeah, at the highest level in clubland, CEOs are dramatically overpaid for the size of the business they operate. So he thought they were well out of whack. And when you consider that several CEOs are taking home more than the senior coach, it is interesting. I mean, clubs aren't huge businesses. A lot of their revenue is guaranteed year on year. But yeah, that was an interesting comment from Jeff. Important to note, though, that the CEO salary is obviously not counted in the soft cap.
So is there any reason why they might be on that much money when there are people that think that they shouldn't be? Is it a competitive nature of the sport?
It's a good question. It's one that I probably haven't thought about a whole lot. I think it's more, I don't want to speak without answer. I mean, Jeff Kennett, I mean, it's interesting. He made those comments, but in 2021, he signed Justin Reeves to a 5-year contract.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, Justin Reeves has stepped down, I think, last month on mental health grounds. And but Jeff obviously signed up Justin for a long-term contract. And I think the ones with a proven record, you can probably, you know, you can't understand it. Like the Brendan Gales of the world. I know Trevor Nisbet's under a bit of head at the moment, but he's been at West Coast for a long time. I thought it was interesting, Mark Evans. I mean, he was Hawthorn Football Manager, then AFL Football Boss, and then the AFL moved him to the Gold Coast Suns. They planted him there to take care of the Suns. Well, before he was, you know, in this industry, he was disciplining kids from the hills at, you know, I think Lilydale High School or Mount Lilydale Mercy College in the eastern suburbs. So he was a year 9 coordinator there, and now he's on, you know, probably, you know, close to $1 million to run the Gold Coast Suns.
Wow. Sam, as always, thanks for, you know, the insight and the figures, and I think it's something we'll have to get you to do every year.
I'm Andrew Rule, the host of the podcast, A Life and Crimes. Here are some of the things that we've been talking about the last few weeks. The brutal truth is that when you start looking at it, they always kill or injure a lot more than each other.
The professional hitman used to be a professional hitman.
Evil strikes in all forms, but particularly as stupidity. Life and Crimes is available wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll see.
Well, our next guest is a new addition to the Herald Sun football team, Josh Barnes. How are you going, Josh?
Good, Will. I missed the jumper presentation earlier. Still waiting on that, but hopefully I'm not a one on done on the podcast. Hopefully I've got a few more games left in me.
Absolutely. Well, this sort of is the makeshift jumper presentation, you know, just joined the podcast team.
Oh, thank you, Will.
No, so it's very good. You just started from the Geelong, crossing the Geelong Advertiser, so looking forward to what you write and produce for years to come.
That's beautiful. That was a nice little speech. I always do that before a debut, so that feels pretty good.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate the feedback. Now, the coaching landscape. So Damien Harwood yesterday, you know, maybe said the cat amongst the pigeons, at least publicly, that he's declared that he misses coaching and he wants to join. We had John Ralph last week saying he was bored. So it does, you know, indicate a little bit of a trend of Damien's mindset. Now, you've had a look at all the coaches and their contract status, which is quite fascinating. It's hard to sort of, you know, remember when everyone comes out of contract. What sort of some of the biggest takeaways do you think from that list and with the spectre of Damien Harwood looming over?
Yeah, he does loom is the right word, isn't it? He looms massively over, I guess, the coaching landscape. The biggest thing that jumped out to me is we're going to be very busy either the end of this year or starting next year because we've got 6 coaches out of contract at the end of 2024. Clubs, as we know, don't like coaches being out of contract. So they prefer to pay them out than really have them in the last year of their deal. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that works, whether some of them even get there. Obviously, Michael Voss and Stuart Dew are out of contract at the end of next year. There's going to be a question mark depending on how both of those guys finish this year. But then you've got Matthew Nix, Justin Longmuir, Chris Scott and Simon Goodwin. That's a lot of names and a lot of intrigue around those guys. And Ken Hinckley is the only one out of contract at the end of this year. So that sort of speaks to how clubs don't like to be in that position where we end up speculating about them.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think coaches probably don't like coaching into a contract year as well. I guess albeit Ken Hinckley, who was happy enough to, you know, put his win-loss record on the line. But clearly last year, Luke Beveridge was one that he was nearly out of contract this year, but they got on the front foot and extended that. Do you foresee some of these players, you know, the likes of Justin Longmuir, despite, you know, not setting the world on fire this year, but pushing for an early re-sign to avoid whatever, you know, circus that might be created?
Yeah, definitely. Like Matthew Nix is a name that sort of sticks out for that, doesn't he? Adelaide's on the way to the finals, really, at the moment. They're playing a great brand of footy. And last time, Adelaide was pretty public that they didn't want him to be sort of lingering with a contract issue heading into the final year. So I would think at the end of this year, he's one they would sit down and chat to and say, can we move you on? It's that kind of thing where they want to get them locked away. And as you said, it avoids us going to every press conference and saying, what's the contract status up to? That happens every time if they're at the end of the year.
And so you mentioned Carlton and the Gold Coast in terms of the contract status. Were they the two that jumps out the most in terms of Dimmer and the most likely or realistic, you know, moving on of one coach to bring another in terms of what you found out?
Yeah, well, it seems to be Gold Coast, Carlton and Port Adelaide seem to stick out as the three. Obviously, we don't know what's happening with Ken Hinckley. As you said, his bargaining power gets better by the week as they continue to win. So it makes sense at the moment that Port would keep him. But if they don't, does Damien Hardwick go back to where he played in a premiership and consider that? That would be the best list to step into at the moment anywhere, I would think, in the AFL if Port Adelaide job was available. So it's those three, really. Gold Coast has a lot of young talent. And Carlton, we know they have five or six A-grade All-Australian-level players. It screams to me almost like a Richmond 2016 that they have the A-grade players. They maybe just need a better system. So does Damien Hardwick think about that if that job becomes available? Obviously, with Michael Voss sitting there at the moment. Those three really are the interesting ones. We know Adam Simpson,
yes.
The jungle drums are beating louder and louder after last week's, obviously, 171-point smashing.
So what's his contract status like?
He is signed till 2025. So right. He's got a long deal. And that becomes an issue under the soft cap these days, the spending within clubs. If you keep your coach signed up for the long term, that's good to get rid of speculation, but then you have to pay them out if you want to move them on. So that's going to be an issue. And Adam Simpson has no sort of signs of quitting himself.
No.
So,
and that's probably what the Eagles need, right, given the financial windfall that they would have to, you know, arc up if he does, if they do want to sack him.
Yeah, that causes the issues, doesn't it, with finance and dealing with all that stuff with lawyers. But you can't really see Hardwick moving over there, can you? Because that is going to be another 5 years maybe until they're good. So it's going to be a long slog. Yeah.
And probably just lastly, so in terms of the long-term contracts, who are the longest coaches that who are the longer term contracts for the coaches? Was it just Alistair Clarkson with his mega deal last year? Are there any that are around that similar mark? Because it seems like they are coming out of contract, you know, in the 2024-2025 realm.
Yeah, Ross Lyon sticks around until 2026. Obviously, he got a 4-year deal, but yeah, Clarkson is the longest tenured coach at the moment. 2027, his deal ends, which is a long way away. We're hoping Clark obviously comes back into footy pretty soon, but there's a lot of question marks about what sort of happens there. But yeah, it's 2026. A lot of coaches 2025, and then even then, we're probably going to be looking at discussion starting already about what happens next with those guys, even next year.
Josh, thank you. Great debut. I'm sure we'll be able to fit you on again. And good luck with the rest of the year.
Yeah, thanks, Will. Was I more of a Dean Polo best on ground on debut, or was I more of a Cade Simpson didn't touch it, do you think?
Hopefully you have the career of Cade Simpson. Maybe we'll just go like that.
Yeah, a bit of both. That'd be nice. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Josh. Well, that'll probably do it. Thanks for joining us on today's show. I'm Will Hogan. Thanks to our guests, Jay Clark, Sam Landsberger and Josh Barnes. Head to the rich100.com.au website to check out the entire list as mentioned on today's episode. And for all our football content, head to the Herald Sun website, Media Street at 12 p.m. on Wednesday before Jay Clark's Cap Space 6 a.m. Thursday. And as always, the football content throughout the weekend for the Monday Tackle with Mark Robinson. See you next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At BP, we're not just talking strategy. We're making it happen. Growing our upstream business with 6 major new projects in 2025. 4 already live, 2 more scheduled this year. Expecting to add 135,000 barrels a day to peak production, helping drive long-term shareholder value. For more on our growth plans, visit bp.com/strategy at work.